Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to Designers for Learning on EdTech Talk. Today is Wednesday, August 7th, 2013, and I'm very excited and happy to have two guests with me today that are former students from the Instructional Design and Technology program at Old Dominion University. My first guest who's going to be speaking today is Kay Rabel, and she is on her break. Both Kay and actually Holly are on their break at lunch. So Kay is going to talk to us first, and then after Kay has a chance to talk, we're going to switch things over, and Holly Groder will be on. And I'll let them both have an opportunity to introduce themselves and what they're here to talk about. But just in general, to frame the discussion, I asked both Kay and Holly to come on because this past spring I taught a class called Consulting Skills for Instructional Designers, and it was very much an experiential learning experience in which students were required to go out and work with real-life clients to solve an instructional or performance improvement problem. And so they had quite a bit of free rein in terms of which client they selected and what type of project they attempted to tackle. And so because of that, it was kind of a unique opportunity for students, particularly students in a virtual program, which we are at Old Dominion for our graduate program. We do meet weekly synchronously using technology such as this, but for the most part, all of our interactions are asynchronous, either using Blackboard or email or whatever it might be. And so it's a challenging project in and of itself, and then raising the bar a little bit by having the experience conducted in a virtual setting. And so with that brief bit of introduction, I'll pass it over to Kay. And Kay, if you could just give a couple seconds overview of yourself, what your background is, what your role is within the program. I believe you're a doctoral student. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then help us understand the nature of the project that you worked on, and we can start delving into some of the specifics after you kind of give us an overview.
Okay, sure. Well, my name is Kay Rabel. I have a background in instructional design. I've been an instructional designer in higher education for the past 3 years, and I recently switched over to corporate America, and now I'm an instructional designer in healthcare, so I'm very excited about that. And with my project, first, I really, really enjoyed it. It was super cool as a doctoral student to have a hands-on activity where I was actually in the role. I felt like I was a consultant while I was not experienced, kind of learning on the fly with guidance and a lot of scaffolding. I did feel like a full-fledged consultant. And my client was a nonprofit organization, and I live in South Florida, and it was a nonprofit organization down in South Florida. And their particular problem, it really shifted. Originally, it was thought to be kind of an internal problem with handling the people seeking assistance from the nonprofit organization. And then it really turned into more of a desire to facilitate like a knowledge management process with online learning and e-learning, because they don't have they didn't have any type of online learning or training, and the organization was located or is located into three separate counties down in South Florida, and everyone would have to commute to one central location in one of the counties for training. And, you know, that presented lots of issues and challenges, such as costing time, people leaving their jobs, and then having to reimburse mileage so that they incurred additional costs. So e-learning was something really paramount in solving a lot of issues with the company or with the organization. And the problem was that there really wasn't any type of infrastructure set up in the IT department to support e-learning or experience to support it. So really what I decided to do was to give them a prototype of a cloud-based solution that they could use to host and to maintain and to facilitate e-learning. And it included an e-learning report that talked about all of the things that they would need to do in order to host and maintain an infrastructure. But because of the limited resources within the organization, my recommendation was a cloud-based solution that also included hosting and managing so that they wouldn't have to rely on their IT department that was already strained. And then I also worked with a member of the organization from their training and development department to create a prototype of, hey, if we decided to do e-learning, this is a quick example of what it would look like, what it would feel like, where people would, how to enroll users, and what the interface would look like, and a quick synopsis of what they would need to do to their content in order to transform it from a traditional face-to-face workshop to something that could be a standalone e-learning module or course. And it went over really well. I am currently not involved into the implementation because I new job and full-time student. It's just a little crazy. But they have actually brought someone else in, and they're moving forward with it. So it was a really great and exciting experience, and I really enjoyed it.
Well,
I learned a lot.
That's awesome. And I often joke, and I've said this phrase for the past probably 10 years that I've been in this field, I think the most exciting and interesting educational experiences are the convergence of messy and magical. And I sensed with all of the students that were in this class both components of that, where the messy, we would have discussions either in the live session or in the blog reflections where things were getting messy. People weren't paying attention to us, were not giving us time, we were running into some internal politics that we would just as soon have stepped away from and not had to have been involved with. But at the same time, there was the magical aspect. And I think part of that comes from a lot of times when you say you're an instructional designer or you're a performance improvement consultant, no one has a clue what you're saying. And so part of, I think, our skill as becoming professionals in this field is being able to translate what we do into something that the average person would understand. And could you take us through that process, which I think happened probably at the initial part, where you had to go in and have your initial meetings and say to them, here I am, I'm here to help you. And then you had to frame your experience so that you were providing the value you knew you could provide while at the same time working with them to actually solve a problem or an opportunity that really was important to them. Can you kind of walk us through
Sure.
what that process was like?
Well, initially, with the analysis phase of it, I met with all of the stakeholders, and it was a very interesting process. And, you know, as you mentioned, messy. It definitely was messy because the stated problem grew from the internal people aren't doing really well with handling customers of our organization, and it morphed into, well, what we really need is e-learning. And then there was resistance along the way of certain people didn't, you know, they thought, wow, this is going to change our organization. I don't really want to do that. And so what kind of things can I throw in the way to stop this from happening? And then also to explain my process, what I do. Some people thought I was just going to come in and get all their PowerPoints together and put them on a website, and I really had to educate them about the process that I would take as an instructional designer, and then also give them examples to show them, hey, this is what instructional design is, and this is what Kay can do for us or help us to understand. So it really was a combination of a lot of things going on at once, of me explaining what an instructional designer does and the processes that I'm going to use and what the end product can look like, and then handling the internal culture and the politics and meeting resistance of those individuals who did not like that I was there, and then selling myself too of, hey, this is actually going to be good for your organization. It might hurt a little bit in the beginning, and you might not like that I'm here or want to do things differently, but in the end, it's going to, you know, be good to help you guys reduce cost and also threats to continuity, because the knowledge of certain processes were contained in a few individuals, and what happened if those individuals didn't show up to work? No one would know what to do. So, you know, and really just building in those benefits help, I guess, to overcome the resistance and show them that this can be a hard process up front, but good in the long run.
Right. Oh, that's great. Okay, we're going to do things a little bit out of order here because Kay needs to get going here for her lunch. And so before we jump into what Holly did on her project, if you wouldn't mind, Holly and Kay, speaking a little bit now, putting your instructor or instructional designer hat on, and if you were to step in my role that I had last year as far as facilitating an experience like this, and I'll explain just in a couple sentences to those that obviously aren't familiar with what we did. We very much made it as though you were in an instructional design consulting firm where there was a requirement that you were upfront with your client in terms of, we originally called it a contract. People kind of got a little freaked out by calling it a contract, so we didn't. Then switched gears. Most people called it a memorandum of understanding with their client that laid out the specific parameters of what their engagement would be, what type of information they would need from the client, what the deliverables in general would look like. And then I required the students, kind of it seems like much to their chagrin, I required them to maintain a blog on our internal learning management system, which was really my opportunity. As I mentioned, this was a virtual class, so I didn't have the opportunity to look people in the eye and have office hours. It was really my opportunity to try to keep up to date with what the students were working on and where they were having problems and try to push them along the way when they were running into stumbling blocks. And then finally at the end, after a series, obviously, as Kay has mentioned several times, there was a lot of back and forth that happened offline with her client, then deliverables started coming in. And so I actually graded the students in terms of the quality of the deliverable that they gave to their client based on what they promised to deliver, as well as just their consulting process in general. So did they take the systematic approach that we were trying to instill as part of the learning objectives of the class? And so as part of that, as I said, the messy part was also part of the class where you had a lot of rope, but at the same time, you can kind of get yourself in trouble. So again, now that was my long-winded explanation to those that weren't part of the class. But for you and Holly, so what would you do if next semester you were tapped to teach this exact same class? Like, what types of things would you incorporate as well? Or eliminate?
Kay, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. For me, I felt like the process of kind of having our own little just enough rope was good, and then having kind of, a lifesaver out there, being you, Dr. Maggio, to come in and say, okay, I really need to Skype with you because this happened, was really good. And I think it's one of those things that just learning on the job was really good. And then having you as the mentor was really good to kind of help talk us down and guide us through the process. So I wouldn't change anything as far as how it went. I really think it was good to kind of get thrown out there and then also have some guidance along the way. So I wouldn't change anything.
Well, thank you. That's why I picked you. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just teasing. But I think to your point, as far as being there as a mentor is an important component of a project like this. And what I would say in response to yours is a matter of scale. We had a fairly small class. I think, what do we have, 12, something like that, participants, mm-hmm. and which is fine and manageable. But if we had 45 students, and it would be that's just something to consider if you're in this position to facilitate it and how you would do it is how you can provide that same level of kind of on-the-fly mentorship and guidance if you're now dealing with a much larger class. So go ahead, Kay. Kay, I keep getting your names mixed up. Holly, go ahead. Do you have any other thoughts to add?
You would do? First, a comment. I first want to say thank you for doing this for us. You actually made us go out there and face the real world and actually do something. There's sort of a security, and it's a detriment, actually. You go to class, you read a book, you talk about it, you write a paper. I hadn't ever engaged in my employer like that, and so by taking this class, I was actually forced to look around my environment and find an opportunity. And in my case, the opportunity really found me. There was a really good timing of things. I did a needs analysis for our sales department, and I'll get into my introduction later. But the opportunity found me, but I actually had to go out into my real world and do real work and turn in real projects that really mattered to my organization and gave me a real understanding of what it's like to have to deal with these interdepartmental things. I acted as an internal consultant. The only thing that I always ever ask are for examples. We used the Hale textbook, and I don't remember her name, the first name, but Judith Hale. And she had tables in her book, so I just copied the table. And so having a worked example or having something to model my behavior is the only thing that I would have added. Now that you have a repertoire of projects or of needs analysis or, you know, of final projects, I would show those and kind of model the behavior and say, okay, this is how you do this or this is how you do this. That's the only thing that I would have done differently, found some more examples, worked examples.
That's an excellent suggestion, yeah. And something I totally struggled with as I was putting the class together is, as you're saying, we have a lot of theory books in our discipline, and some of the practical books or whatever it might be don't integrate then the theory. Like, why are we doing it? Which you need, obviously, in a graduate level class. So I love your idea of building upon the work that the students have already had as a means of making that tie into the practical side of things. So saying, okay, we went through this class. These are the ways that we found were appropriate to do whatever it might be that you're doing. And I see Jill is in the chat room. I was speaking with her mentor, Monica Tracy from Wayne State University, about this. And she is a big proponent and advocate of finding ways to improve our practice as designers, mm-hmm. and this whole idea of design thinking and pushing that. And she actually mentioned, we were out to lunch the other day, and she mentioned that Jill has a way, I think it was as part of maybe the initial conversations during interviews when you're trying to determine the content. I think it was like a content analysis. And I think we're weak as a field in sharing that information. I think that we kind of reinvent the wheel every time we go in on a project. And it's kind of a rare find, as you mentioned, the Judith Hale book, and I'll put the link in the chat room, where she explains why she is making a recommendation for a tool she's using, and then she's free to share it. And I think it's kind of a nice, I think it's even called a handbook, for instructional design students to use as kind of a guidebook for how do I actually implement and put forth what I've been learning in the classroom in a real scenario. So I think that's cool. And I want to be sensitive to Kay's time. So Kay, if you just need to shut your window and head out, I just want to thank you for your participation, but feel free to stick around as long as you want. But let's transition over. And Holly, why don't you take a moment and describe your scenario, which is different than Kay's, in that you took the route of going the internal consultant route, which in layman's terms simply means you worked for your own organization that you're employed with to do your project.
Yeah, so I work for a call center, and there's a lot of turnover and there's a lot of training, and so you can imagine it's kind of a busy place. And we have an internal sales. It's inbound phone calls only, so that's kind of nice. And our sales manager had contacted the training development manager and said, we need training, always. It was just about the same time that this class was starting. And so my manager approached me and said, hey, we need to do this. And I said, hey, let's wait a minute. Let's do this right. Let's give me a few months to work this out. And what I was able to do with Dr. Madrell's scaffolding and help, and I did a needs analysis on the sales department. And what I came up with were three different things. The agents weren't using proper sales techniques. The management wasn't coaching. Like, the management didn't know sales techniques, so they weren't able to coach the agents to the right things, like qualifying the sale, closing the sale, or even just asking for the sale. You know, somebody calls up and says, I want to buy I'm interested in this widget. The agent wasn't taking the next step and saying, well, would you like to buy the widget from me today? So they were just, let me back up, I'm sorry. There was also a shift in our culture. We were transitioning from a pre-sales environment, more of a customer customer information group to an actual sales environment. And so there was a culture shift, and some of the people were still thinking they worked for pre-sales, and other people were thinking that they worked for sales, and it was like coming and going, and it was all over the place. And we're still struggling with that identity crisis a little bit today, but we're making good strides. So what I did was I created two survey instruments. I did a questionnaire for the leadership, and I did individual interviews for those 6 leadership people. And then I constructed a survey for the staff, for the agents. There were about 50 people. And so I took 2 different approaches, a personal approach and then a mass feeding approach. And I analyzed the data separately, hand analyzed it, because it was all interview, and run analytics and, did percentages, I did primarily dichotomous items, which are yes and no or agree, disagree. And I didn't put any Likert information in there. I just wasn't that advanced yet. So I just made yes or no, agree or disagree, and then a spot for additional response. And I did those, I analyzed those by hand as well. So it wasn't too much. I do want to mention to everyone, if you work with data, back it up. back it up in triplicate. My hard drive broke, died, lost everything. Fortunately, I lost it after I had completed the assignment, but now I can't go back and look at it because I had it on one hard drive, and I didn't update, and I didn't save it, and I'm stupid, and I know it. So word to the wise, if you work with data, always back it up. Email it to yourself at home. Email it to yourself at work, so at least you have a copy. Okay. But back to the internal consultancy. I wrote my report out, which was the final deliverable for the class, and shared it with directors, managers, the supporting staff of the sales department, and then also shared the information with the agents and showed them what their take was on the questionnaires. We also started sharing it with consultants outside, real professional people, and I got feedback that the report that I had created was very well done. And so I wanted to pass that along to you, Dr. Madrell. My work was very well done and is respected by real people who
really
do this job. So kudos to you for guiding me through this.
No, that's great. You did the work. Yeah. That's super. That's great.
We're such a small organization here. We came up with 3 solutions: train the leadership, train the agents, and have a rebranding campaign. So we can do a couple of those things in-house, but really we need some more help because we're such a small organization, and that's where the external consultants came in, looking at my report and making recommendations for how to train the leadership. And we're looking for a training program, basically a methodology that everyone can follow from the top down. And that's kind of where we are today.
So do you think, based on what you did, how was it working? You got to hear from the other students, including Kay, who worked externally. What challenges or opportunities did you face doing a project like this with people you worked with every day?
Well, the opportunity was, the people that I was working for as the internal consultant are in the next building, so I walked myself over there, and I walked up to their desk, and I said, hey, talk to me. No long-distance phone calls, no Skypes, no appointments. I just roll on in. The negative thing is that I used to work for that department, so I had some personal, not misconceptions, but personal experience with the department, and so I was very conscious of not letting that shade how I asked the questions and how I analyzed the questions. It did influence the way I interpreted the responses from the agents, because when in this culture, when somebody is given a survey, you want to give your best answer, the halo effect kind of, and so you don't want to say how you truly feel. And so I often say, take this with a grain of salt. They're saying this, but their behavior is actually reflecting this. So that was an issue I had to kind of, when I was explaining the results to the management, the people who aren't in the trenches every day, you know, the director level. They don't really, you know, I don't want to say they don't know what's going on, but they're not answering the phones every day. And so their behavior is different than what they're saying they're doing or what they're saying they want. Mm-hmm. So that was something different.
So in kind of getting back to these questions I had originally is putting your hat on as the instructional designer or the instructor of an experience like this. In this class, because I really didn't know any better and didn't have contacts of my own, I sent you out to go find your clients. Mm-hmm. How would it have changed the experience if I had a couple different things? One, had a roster of potential clients for you to work with, or also comment then on what if we had a small, maybe even just one client we worked on and we worked on it as a group. How would those factors, do you think, have changed the experience for you if I'd gone one or the other way of that? So again, one is where I provided you with your client choices to pick from, or secondarily required everybody to work on the same project with one client. How would that have changed the experience, do you think?
I think if I had been given a list of projects or a list of clients and some sort of documentation, you know, you have a choice of A, B, C, or D. Knowing myself, I would have taken the path of least resistance. You know, it's just who I am. I try not to be unaware
of it.
Human nature. So that, I would weigh that with that thought of, you know, path of least resistance. I may not have gotten as much out of it because I wasn't held responsible on two fronts, a scholastic front and a job front, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's different. But if I had worked on a project that was given to me in a group, that would have brought a different dynamic. You know, the first thing that came to my mind was too many chefs, not enough soup. You know, so having, you know, but then again, if the project were big enough, you know, you would have to work as the project manager and say, okay, Holly, you are going to do the needs assessment. Kay, you are going to do the development work and, you know, assign out the roles. And then I wouldn't have gotten the breadth of the whole project. So there's positive and negatives to all three approaches, finding your own project, choosing from a list, or working in a group. Let's do all three, you know.
Let's do it all. Well, and that's something I've contemplated as well, is give people choice. And so in this class, I made it a requirement that they were individual projects because, as you're saying, I really wanted everybody to experience the whole thing from soup to nuts, putting yourself out there from the sales aspect of explaining to somebody what you do all the way through to contracting and finally having a deliverable. And make it a group experience, those tasks become chopped up and you don't get a full perspective. Conversely, life is life these days. You work in groups, and so that's also an important skill set to develop, is how you work with others in this type of thing. And certainly we can't all be experts in everything, so it's if you have an area like evaluation or whatever it might be that you want to build your skill set on, that'd be a great opportunity for you to take on that task and pass it off. So I guess from my perspective, it's not necessarily, I don't think, from a learning perspective, there's necessarily a best way. I think you can kind of skin the cat a lot of different ways. But maybe the answer, I may be answering my own question by saying offering people the choice, because, again, everyone's coming in at it with different needs and expectations, and if you want to see work with others to get that opportunity. Maybe that's something that if I were to teach it again, give folks the opportunity of working on small teams, maybe two or three people. I think once you get past three, then you're really starting to, you're really slicing it into such tiny pieces, it's probably not as meaningful an experience. I wanted to open it up too. I want to be sensitive to your time. I think we were trying to keep it to like 40 minutes and we're coming up on 30 right now. So if anybody had any questions, please feel free to post it in the chat room. I do see there's some folks I met at a service learning conference, and so we haven't necessarily tied this experience to service learning, but really it is. As Kate mentioned, she worked with a nonprofit, which to me is then the definition of a service learning experience. Yours was not your own organization, but I think a lot of the things we've just talked about would translate completely to moving this course into a true service learning opportunity that you did, say, for example, as a practicum or as an internship or however it was structured. Do you think that, from your perspective, would that have, I don't want to say raised the bar a bit, but maybe made it a different type of experience if you had been working with a nonprofit that was there to serve others in whatever capacity it might be, some type of social mission that they have? Would that have changed the dynamic of your relationship, do you think?
Probably, but I would hope not. It's hard to say. Definitely, I would have done things. I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, if I didn't have the requirement of my job for doing this, it would have not been as much pressure. And, you know, if I didn't have the instant gratification of these meetings and walking over to these people, that would have made it a little more difficult. Also, I tended to do a lot of my writing on the weekends when, you know, a nonprofit may or may not be available. So, you know, logistical things would have made a difference. I think my attitude would have been a little different because I would not have known these people. It's more similar to Kay's experience where, you know, I don't know how to tweak these people. I don't know. You know, I don't have that personal knowledge of who I'm working with. It would have been another layer of, okay, let's figure this all out. So I had that advantage that I was, you know, I've been here for 7 years. I know these people. I know their quirks. I know the stories about them. You know, I know all the politics. So, you know, that would have been a different layer of, you know, reorienting myself to what the project is. And I didn't have that, so I could just jump right in and say, hey, I need this, and they responded to me without, you know, kicking up a fuss, and nobody tried to stop me, and they're, you know, surprisingly, everybody was willing to have me come in and say what I was doing, and they were all very receptive. I didn't have any pushback because they need this. This is how they earn their bonuses, and, you know, it's very important to them, you know, their metrics, I think.
Mm-hmm. So. And I think also tying into what you're saying, you didn't need to necessarily have as long an introductory phase they knew who you were and what your skill set was and what you were bringing to the table, where you didn't have to necessarily sell that piece. And as we're kind of winding down here, I also wanted to talk. Obviously, our class was a virtual classroom, as I mentioned, and for the most part, all the students picked companies or organizations or even people. Some people only worked with one client, a one-man shop. But for the most part, they were meeting with their client face-to-face. So obviously, we're all pretty comfortable working virtually. We do it in our educational setting. But for whatever reason, we didn't take that next step and find clients that were at a distance from where we were. How would that have changed the dynamic, do you think? Again, given that we're not afraid to use technology to interface with people, so it's not an issue of being afraid of doing it. It just, for whatever reason, didn't happen. So do you want to kind of add your two cents on why do you think it didn't happen and what would have been some of the obstacles or even benefits of having virtual relationships with your clients?
That's going to be hard for me to answer. I have actually done a little bit of other consulting work for a friend of mine down in Atlanta, and we do all of our consulting via Skype. He shows me what his plans are, where he's going. I talk to him, you know, basically, you know, kind of a similar situation to this, and, you know, I work out my documents. He says, okay, I need this, and so there really isn't anything different than just talking on the phone. However, I did know him first, and again, I come back to that personal relationship where I knew these people outside of the virtual world, and I had an established relationship with them, so it made it easier for me to read their body language. You know, the video on the web is unbelievable because I can see those micro expressions and I can kind of see if he's getting it or if, you know, he's not paying attention or, you know, if whatever's going on. So having that visual element really, really helps. And I think if we were to work virtually, I would highly recommend having that video element. It just helps in the introductions. It helps to see the person in their environment. It, you know, just gives you a lot of information. And I don't like to say stereotyping, but there's a lot of information that you get by seeing somebody and seeing their expressions, and you can tell if they're getting it. Same thing with education. You know, if you can't see them, they're going to be eating their sandwich or watching TV or, you know, surfing on their other monitor over here so you can see what they're doing. So, yeah, if you're going to do virtual, I would definitely have a video element on the important meetings.
Yeah, and to your point, the ability, like we're doing here, to have Google Hangout or whatever, it's there. It's right. Mm-hmm. It's free. You can do it. And I guess I just thought it was kind of funny that nobody took advantage of it. But I think, like you said, this was such a challenge to go find your client to begin with. Naturally, you're going to go to relationships you had already established, and you had those would be the ones in your backyard. We're not getting any questions in the chat room. It's a kind of quiet, a lot of activity going on there, but not necessarily any questions. But I definitely wanted to give you the opportunity to add your two cents and kind of tell us where are you at now? I know you're finishing your last class this summer, and then you're done with the master's program. So what's on the horizon for you?
That's an excellent question, and I should have an answer for that.
I should ask. I never like that question myself. But.
I'm finishing my last class, and so I still have a few more things. I have a project that I'm working with my advisor, and graduation isn't until December, so I'm still, you know, associated with the school until December. And hopefully I'll graduate. You know, I can't see anything. Why wouldn't, but you never know.
Don't want to jinx it.
Yeah, I know. So as we spoke earlier, I'm looking for volunteer opportunities because I'm deathly, deathly afraid of losing my muscle. I've developed over the past 2 years the ability to think and to write and to use technology and to multitask and to do all these wonderful things, and I'm afraid that if I don't engage, then I'll lose it. And I'm not ready for a doctoral program. My husband misses me. You know, I forgot what my house looks like. I have one room.
Well, you're a perfect candidate for it. So the day you're ready, you just jump for. I will be your, first letter of recommendation. You're definitely ready for it from an academic standpoint. So it's just a matter of when your life aligns with your goals. Because you certainly, like I said, are an excellent candidate for it.
Thank you.
Well, I'll put it out there one more time. If anybody in the chat room has any specific questions, please share them. And I'm trying to think of a way that we could share what we did in the class in a more meaningful way. So maybe what I might do is include some of those templates that we were using for example, our memorandum of understanding, and maybe even put the syllabus up so those that may want to teach a similar class in the future would have kind of at least mine is a stepping stone to build off of, and I would encourage anybody to make changes and tweaks based on what you guys have said today as well as what their impressions are of the class experience in and of itself. But I loved it, and because of people like you and Kay, and I want to make this clear, I invited everybody in the class to come, and you two were the only souls that were that were willing to come and get on the camera here and share your experiences. But I don't think I'm lying when I say I think everybody got something out of the experience, all different things, and it didn't matter it didn't matter what your entry skills were when you came in. Everybody made it their own, and maybe that would be a great place to end as far as what are your impressions for those that didn't come in today without getting specific to their situation, but what did you find about watching what was happening around you with other people's projects and that whole idea that we all came in with different entry experiences, but we all got something out of it that maybe looked a little bit different? You want to just touch upon that as we kind of wrap things up?
Sure. I really appreciated having some more advanced people in the class. I don't remember the woman's name, but she worked for a community college. She was the director or the provost or something, you know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
She had some really good points to make, and her experience as an employer/employee gave some good guidelines for how to approach people. And so she was a very valuable, you know, asset to have in the class. And then I'm thinking of another young lady. She had just started the program a couple semesters before and was working with a sorority, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing those two spectrums really made me appreciate what was given to me, you know, the job that I was doing, because I was seeing their struggles. You know, there was a confidentiality struggle on one end, and then there was a I'm working for friends struggle on the other end, and trying to, you know, get your friends to respect you as, you know, as an instructional designer, and then trying to get people to trust you on the other end. So it was really interesting to have that expanse of, you know, experience being shared.
Yeah, and to your point, the one example you mentioned, the student was fairly new to the program. I think what was interesting for me to watch was just her confidence level, how it changed at the beginning. And Doug Symington just asked in the text chat what the prerequisite instructional design knowledge was when you came in. And we had one student who wasn't even in the instructional design program, and we had some that was their first semester. And so clearly they were very apprehensive about going out and selling their skills when they really didn't feel and probably didn't possess any. So there was a certain amount of backfilling, and I think that was actually kind of cool, because I think I could sense, when I would, especially when we would go into breakout sessions and into smaller groups during our virtual sessions, I very often would hear, as you mentioned, the more senior students, maybe people like yourself finishing the master's or those in the PhD program, helping out and giving suggestions of resources to look into, and pointing to specific parts where their process could be improved. And I think, it was a little bit of a challenge for them as well as the rest in the class that we weren't all coming in with the same background knowledge, but at the same time, it was a great opportunity. I think you learn a lot when you teach others, and so I think it was a great opportunity for those with more experience to kind of step back and watch the process happen with someone with not as much experience. So I agree with what you're saying. All right. Well, let's wind it down. Thank you so much again for joining me, and I hope we can have you back and you can talk about when you're starting the PhD program.
Give me a couple years.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we'll get you sooner than that. And thank you to Kay. I think Kay is just floating around in the back channel. I think she is multitasking at work. So thank you very much, Kay, also for joining us. And everybody keep an eye out. I don't have a scheduled next Designers for Learning webcast, but I'm hoping to get another one in before Labor Day. I have someone sort of on deck, but she's starting the new school year, so I won't announce that officially, but do keep an eye out, and I will send postings as I did this past time. So thanks again, Holly, and thanks a lot, Kay.
Thank you.
Okay, talk to you later. Bye-bye.